on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting with 93-year-old George Genovese of North Hollywood, California, originally from Staten Island, New York. His new book with Dan Taylor, A Scout's Report, is available now. All the details online at hometownheroesradio.com. 70 years ago, he was on the tiny Pacific island of Aishima, just off of Okinawa. We heard about a brutal fall he survived during an attack by Japanese planes. The injury he suffered would hamper his playing career in baseball later on. You played pro ball before and after the war, but you were also playing during World War II, even right there on Aishima.
Oh, yeah. The captain I had once I got overseas loved baseball. This is why it's so interesting. He says, George, could you line out a baseball field here for me? I'll get the engineers to come over. There was a few native houses around. And I said, yeah, he was a very good guy, very good officer. He was a captain. He loved baseball. So with the Corps of Engineers, we lined out a nice diamond. It was dirt, you know, no grass, just scrub grass, but you could play. And it was right over our airport. And then we would be playing baseball, and the planes were flying to Japan. And I sometimes would laugh because I thought, here we are playing baseball. Those planes are headed for Japan over our heads, and we're down there playing baseball. I thought, if I say something about this to somebody, they won't believe it. Mm-hmm. But it was recreation, see? After the war, I had an assignment to take 10 prisoners and bring them over to where everybody ate, and then it had to be cleaned up. And I had the same 10 guys report to me every day. I had baseball gloves and all. I would take breaks with them. They were my friends. Honestly, it was hard to explain. I treated them good.
These are Japanese prisoners.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I'd get, you know, let's take a break. I swear they could have killed me times when my back was turned, you know, but they didn't. But yet I could look over on the road there, down the road, maybe about 2 miles, a mile and a half. They were still, wouldn't surrender. People were jumping off the cliff, killing themselves, committing suicide.
This is after Japan had surrendered.
Yeah.
But there were holdouts who didn't want to give in. But you're supervising these 10 Japanese prisoners. And here, these countries have been attacking each other and fighting each other throughout the war.
Yeah.
But between you and these 10 Japanese prisoners, baseball brought you together.
Yeah. The atomic bomb was dropped, remember? Okay. Mm. We were threatened. They were going to wipe us out with gas. We had to take our gas mask everywhere we went. We had to sleep with it on, all, but they never came.
Good thing.
Yeah, and the only thing I could still remember out of that was those that were on the edge of the island, Aishima. You could see that they were still committing suicide. You could see them. What could you do?
Yeah, that sounds heartbreaking.
And then, of course, the Japanese, it was Jeannie from Shanghai. I used to go to the Radio Shack and listen to her, all the lies she was telling, you know, because we had dropped the atomic bomb, which that was the only way they were going to end it, because they would commit harakiri, or they would kill you, or if you captured them, they'd kill themselves.
Right.
Rather than surrender.
But with these prisoners in your care, baseball...
Yeah.
Was a common bond, gave you something to share.
That's right. I had to come and go up to the compound, and I took the same 10 every time because they were, you know, they were assigned to me. We got close to where I, you know, shake hands with them. It's hard to explain.
Long before that, though, while you're in the service and playing baseball for a military team, you faced a guy that I think everybody's heard of and maybe know was a decorated World War II veteran himself, Bob Feller. You had to hit against Bob Feller?
Oh, yeah. I did.
Where was that?
Well, he was in the Navy.
Uh-huh.
And we played the Navy, a ball game, and we had our best pitcher. He was a left-hander by the name of Johnson, Ken Johnson. It was a 2-1 pitching duel. Fella struck me out 4 times, but I wasn't the only one. I'll tell you, boy, his ball was, you know, he had that big windup and throw that leg up. You couldn't find the ball, let alone the velocity. We didn't have radar guns in those days, I tell you, Mima. So what they did to find out just how hard he threw, they had a guy ride a motorcycle, and they timed it and figured out he was throwing over 100 miles an hour. That's how they found out how hard he threw.
Long before you had that radar gun in your hand scouting pitchers.
Yeah, Bob Feller was a very nice guy, I'll tell you. Later on, we would bump into each other. They were scouting like me. He had a job scouting. And the last time I saw him was a couple of years ago. Looked good. We chatted. Nice, very nice man. You never thought he played baseball. We never talked about that.
Did you ever remind him that he struck you out four times?
Oh, yeah. I did the first time I met him after the war, many years after the war. You got me four times.
You're probably not the only guy to say that, too.
No.
Well, you and Bob Feller could laugh because you survived the war, but one of your minor league teammates from before the war, we mentioned him, Frank Zerra, he did not. I want to read this Silver Star citation about that minor league catcher turned war hero who made the ultimate sacrifice. The President of the United States of America takes pride in presenting the Silver Star posthumously to Corporal Frank S. Zerra, United States Marine Corps Reserve, for conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity as a tank infantry liaison man serving with Company A, 6th Tank Battalion, 6th Marine Division, in action against enemy Japanese forces on Okinawa, 21 May 1945. Blown to the ground by an exploding enemy artillery shell as he was moving into position on a shelf-like ridge south of Sugarloaf Hill, Corporal Zerra quickly recovered his radio and proceeded to his station. Again interrupted when he and other members of the team were buried with mud from another bursting shell while they were attempting to set up the radio, he dug himself and radio out and, despite continued artillery bursts from all directions, worked desperately to prepare the radio for operation until he was mortally wounded by a Japanese shell. By his perseverance in this vital task, Corporal Zerra effected the rapid communication of accurate orders to the tanks, thus enabling them to maneuver into position and destroy hostile mortars and automatic weapons. His devotion to duty and indomitable fighting spirit were in keeping with the highest traditions of the United States Naval Service. He gallantly gave his life for his country. So, George, you didn't get to read that Silver Star citation in 1945. How did you hear that your close friend had died?
After the war, you know, you heard he got killed, but you don't know, so you go through the cemetery.
So this is right there on Okinawa. Yeah. You find the cemetery, you find his grave.
Yeah.
What did you think of when you looked at that?
Well, I felt bad because we were all close, you know. You get so, you know, when you're playing ball, you have your friends. Once you're in with a group, it's hard. They're like your brothers.
Is there part of you that says, that could have been me?
Oh, yeah. Hell, when you're getting bombed all the time until we were able to actually wipe out their Air Force, you know. You'd see them fighting. I mean, here we'd be lined up eating and you're watching the planes shooting at one another. It's quite a sight, but then you know somebody's going to die. Somebody's got to lose.
Yeah.
And you see it. You'd sit there waiting and you line up and to get your food to eat. You're sitting there watching. In a way, it's almost like watching a movie, you know?
I'm sure many times it was. And you told us about the incident where you were injured. You refused the Purple Heart. So that's a pretty close call. When you fall 15 feet, you survive that, you're banged up enough, they want to give you the Purple Heart. What about the rest of the war? Were there other moments where you look back and say, boy, that was pretty close, that could have been it for me?
Oh, yeah, because, you know, they kept bombing up until they finally decided to quit.
And as far as your duties on a day-to-day basis, you talked about watching the screen and seeing the blips and all that. It's kind of ironic that you're working with radar in the military before you'd hold that gun up to, you know, gauge pitcher's velocity all these years in Major League Baseball. What were your duties on a day-to-day basis during the war?
Everybody had guard duty. Everybody had KP, if you were below the rank of sergeant. The military is something I wouldn't want to go through again, but the things you learn how to survive. We had to learn how to take our gun, blindfolded, put it all together again, because that was your life. You're going to need that. So the teaching is great. Mm-hmm. I never want to go through it again, but I don't regret any of it.
Do you ever remember feeling scared over there?
Or, scared?
Or concerned that you might not make it home?
Yeah, when they come over to bomb us, you know, and you say your little prayer that you don't get. I did. I prayed all the time. Mm-hmm. I was scared. When, what are you going to do? You have no defense, you know. It isn't like if you were fighting hand to hand, you know.
Yeah. You probably had a mother praying for you back home, too, huh?
Oh, yeah. Well, think about it. There were three of us in the Pacific at one time.
I'm interested in your perspective on this, because you probably have as good a perspective as anyone, someone who was playing pro ball before the war, played again after the war. In today's world, we have these multi-million-dollar contracts, and we can't imagine, you know, one of the top players in the big leagues going off to war somewhere. But during your days, I mean,
didn't make any difference.
Ted Williams is over there flying planes.
That's right. Second baseman who just died recently. He went twice from the Yankees there, the second baseman.
Gerry Coleman, sure. And of course, Jackie Robinson was in the service. Monty Irvin, who I mentioned.
That's right.
I mean, you go down the line. Yeah. Yogi Berra, all these great baseball players were over there serving in the war. What do you think that says about America at that time?
This is the greatest country in the world. I know there were different people who tried to weaken it sometimes, but I think the average American, you're not going to beat them. You have your families to protect and everything. I think the people who have suffered in other countries and came here to make a new life, and they see that we have the freedom. We're not perfect, but I think it's still the best country in the world where you live in. How come they all want to come here?
You know, and it strikes me, if you didn't make it home from the war, not only would your kids and grandkids not be around and great-grandkids, yeah. but there's a lot of baseball players who might not have been signed because the scout might not have found them and discovered those diamonds in the rough. We're going to talk about some of that. But specifically with regard to your time in the service, even though it maybe would have cost you a longer big league career as a player with that injury, what are you most proud of? What gives you the most pride when you think back on those years?
Well, I was proud to have served. I mean, think of my parents. Three of us were over the Pacific at the same time. How about the Sullivan brothers that died on the ship?
Yeah.
Then they made sure that they wouldn't ever have no more than two on any military outfit.
And all three of you came home.
Yeah. What do you think your parents were thinking about?
Well, what was it like to see your parents again when you got back?
Great. Wonderful. I always remember my trip home to get under the Golden Gate Bridge. You'll never know how I felt. No kid, coming in from South Pacific. It made you feel, well, it was worth it. Come onto the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. Was the greatest sight I ever saw.
But then you guys all come home, and then Frank Zerra doesn't. And 400,000 Americans never came home.
That's right.
Is that heavy to think about?
Oh, yeah. Look, it takes time to get over it. You know, when you first come home, it's a big adjustment to make, really. You know. Their memories now.
Sure. Well, and you've got a lifetime of memories of your book's called The Scouts Report, 70 Years in Baseball. And as I mentioned earlier, you've fulfilled a lot of roles. You were a ball player. You did make it to the major leagues. And I guess we should touch on that briefly. So you're playing in the minors before the war. You go through the war. You come back. Your throwing arm's not the same, but you continue to play in the minors. And you made it all the way to the big leagues. How did you find out you were going to the show?
I played great ball against Bucky Harris. And Bucky Harris was going to be the manager of Washington.
The Senators.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So I was a little bit spoiled because I played out here in the Pacific Coast League, Hollywood Stars. We won a championship. This is a ring.
You're wearing the ring right now. 1949 Pacific Coast League champs.
And I fell in love with the girl I was planning to get married. All of a sudden, I'm gone to the big leagues. I sat there for, I think I got in three ball games. I never was the second guy. I didn't want to be just a utility man.
Yeah.
I had a little pride. I wanted to play.
Sure.
And I'm sitting on the bench, and finally in Fenway Park, I said, Bucky, I just was going to go back to the Coast League. I said, I'm not happy here. I'm 29 years old now. I might as well be out there where I have a house now. I'm in love with this girl. Plan to get married. And I said, to sit here in the big leagues, even though it was my ambition, I said, the fact that I'm going to be a utility man, it's not worth it to me. That's exactly what I know I was wrong, but that's the way I put it.
Well, maybe it was right for you at the time, for your family.
I don't regret it now, but I mean, I didn't know I was good enough to play up there.
And maybe someone listening today in 2015 doesn't understand. At the time, there was no Major League Baseball on the West Coast, and you probably made more money in the Pacific Coast League than you did in the Major Leagues.
Yeah, so all those things, plus I was planning to get married, made my mind up. And yet, my dream was to get to the big leagues, which I did, but I wasn't playing. It was awful watching Williams and DiMaggio. You get in the pinch hit, I think I got in three ball games.
Well, and sometimes, even if we question whether our decision was right in the moment, it has a way of working out. Yeah. God's plans are always better than ours.
That's mine.
And now you are one of the most legendary scouts in the history of baseball. But that wasn't a right-away thing either. You did some managing in the minor leagues. Yeah. What was it that clicked or led to you becoming a scout? How did that originate?
Well, I was with the Giants at that time, Jack Schwartz and Carl Hubbell. They were my bosses. They were not happy, but they weren't getting there any ball players. And they said, we think you're the guy that could find some ball players.
So you were managing for them in the minors?
Yeah. The last club I managed was El Paso. Won the pennant, got a nice ring, stored away, you know, and developed a few ball players at the same time. I guess they saw that and they figured that I was the guy that should be out here scouting for them.
So that's how it began. And when we come back, we'll hear a highlight or two from a half century of uncovering diamonds in the rough and propelling them toward the majors. 93-year-old George Genovese, our guest today. Go meet him next weekend. He and author Dan Taylor will be signing copies of his book Saturday, July 11th from 2 to 5 p.m. at Barnes & Noble in Fresno, California. You can also catch him at the South Pasadena Library on July 16th at 7. That info is at hometownheroesradio.com with some great photos from George's incredible career. We'll hear about his special connection with one of the greatest switch-hitting sluggers in baseball history when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.